in this week on the 27th of July, 1989, warming up for their centenary season, an Alan Cork goal was enough for the Dons to beat Swedish club Finnskalof. What a great name. 1-0 on the first match of a five-game Scandinavian tour. The tragic news of the death of Laurie Cunningham had cast a shadow over the summer, with Terry Gibson saying of his former teammate, he wasn't just a good player, he was a tremendous guy. Some of the things he could do with the football were out of this world. Sad times indeed. But we're at, this is it. The pre-season has kicked off. And we might not be doing Swedish tours, but we're taking down Southwest London. Taking down South London. We're the same old Wombles. We're back.
I've been standing here since many years ago. You've been under my skin for as long as I have known. We traveled away and we stand in the rain and the cold. Take the rough with the smooth. If we win or we lose, we just go on.
Hello, hello, dear listener, and welcome, you patient, lovely people. Let me introduce, we've got the whole team here today. I have got Monfrere, the football fixer, Niall Cooper. How are you doing, Niall?
All right, Mackie. Good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you too. And, of course, a man with all the buttons, the tech wizard, is Dr. Adam Proctor. Hey, Adam, how are you doing? Have you got any other interesting sites we can use?
I'm fine. No, I'm fine now. This is working. We clearly are pushing against the edges of open source software, but it's fine.
And the face, and he was last week, I believe, the face of the football, of the Oppo football fans, it is Tall Mark Lewis. How are you doing, Mark?
Very well. Thank you very much. We managed to get the software to work. So, dear listener, if our wonderful host, Mr. Matthew Cooper, sounds a little frazzled, it's because he's having technical issues. I actually saw a football match at the weekend, so I can actually talk about pre-season, which is nice.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think this is what is interesting about pre-season is, you know, because is Mark, are we going to be going 5-3-2? Is that the same system? Do you think we're going to be?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Twice on Sundays. Yeah. I mean, when you see the indication that I'd worked out, we have 7 or 8 midfield players, if you count in Keng as a midfield player. I managed to list Maycock twice when I put them on social media. But you have 7 or 8 midfield players, so much so that we had a first choice starting 11 had 3 midfield players who I would say are not first choice. And then, on Saturday this is, and then 3 more came on. And the 3 that came on were Maycock, Hippolyte and Smith, who I'd say probably are first choice. But actually, on top of all that, you had Kai Jennings, who potentially could be the breakthrough midfield player this season, who played 73 minutes or so at left wing back. And he hasn't got a left foot. And he did pretty well, to be fair, but he's not a wing back.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, it does feel like we have got a lot of midfielders. I think I was like you. I think it must be something like 7 or 8, and it depends whether Nkeng is counted as a midfielder or a wing back. And obviously, I'm putting Jennings as a midfielder. But then you've got, was it McCoy Splatt, Alistair Smith, Jake Reeves, Jennings in there, Maycock. I mean, it just feels like we've got so many midfielders, and yet I think it's just 3 centre-backs. So we clearly need another centre-back. We've got, I think you would say we've got 4 strikers. But again, you know, people like Hackford and Sass are in there as well. Are they, you know, are they what we're looking for? Stevens is going to be out for a long period of time. And Brown kind of like sits really in his best position. He's kind of like sitting behind the front two, but he's going to be one of the two. So it's a weird thing. But we win. But you know, we beat Charlton.
So yeah, I mean, just to kind of quickly run through Saturday, we started 3-5-2, we finished 3-5-2. We started 3-5-2 with McDonnell in goal. Apparently, Bishop is injured and he was at the game, so all the conspiracy theories can go take a hike, as they say. Yeah. McDonnell played really well, actually. He made three or four very good saves. And, you know, if the season started next week, then actually McDonnell, I think, would probably be pretty fed up if Bishop was just parachuted straight back in. But anyway, wing-backs, we had Jennings started left and... I was the game, and I can't even remember who started on the right-hand side. But the back three that started were Oggs and Sweeney. First time I had a chance to see Sweeney, which was fascinating because he is, as my daughter put it, he looks like he's about to eat the rest of the Wimbledon players, frankly, because he's so physically imposing. And we always thought that Jono was our main centre-back, right? And he's always been, you know, done really well and been the fulcrum and so on. When Johnson came on second half, he didn't look anything like as opposing at all. But just to echo your point, mate, you're quite right. When Johnson came on second half, he came on with two 18-year-olds, Ivanovic and Riley Horan, both of which are 18, both of which played pretty well, actually, I would say, in the sort of 20 minutes or so they were on. But yeah, that's really, there's no particular strength in depth there at all. Seddon actually played left side wing back. That's the one I'm forgetting. So Seddon played left side wing back. He didn't play, left side centre back. He didn't play wing back.
Because
concerning for me.
And Sessegnon didn't play at all.
Sessegnon didn't play at all. No, I mean, people have been dipping in and out. It was Tilly that was playing right wing back, and Tilly had missed midweek and he clearly wasn't match fit. He was struggling to get back, having gone forward on a couple of occasions. Having said that, you know, his I think it was his delivery that was flicked on for the second goal. So Tilly is as good as you'd imagine he would be normally. He just needs to get a little more match practice. So yeah, you've got wing backs tied up in King and Seddon on one side and Sessegnon and Tilly on the other side. But in the centre backs, you know, going through it last season, all of Bauer and Lewis and Johnson. And Oggs all played 15 games or more. But we ended up with Alistair Smith playing centre-back, you know, because we had so many injuries.
Yeah.
You've
been impressed with Sweeney.
I was very impressed by Sweeney, yeah. He's dominant in the air. And the other thing I noticed is that one of the things that, going back a couple of years back, we had a very simple tactic when there wasn't much going on in play and the ball would be played across the back three. And then Joe Lewis would launch one towards Al Hamady or towards Bugle to knock down for Al Hamady. Yeah. Sweeney's got that range of long range passing as well, with some accuracy as well. And as I say, he's 6'3", so he dominates in the air from defensive and from attacking set pieces as well. So that's promising. He's not that quick, but he's quick enough for this level. I mean, Charlton looked pretty impotent, to be honest. And if the online rumours that are circulating as we record this are correct, we may be picking up one of the Charlton strikers, but he didn't even play on Saturday. He didn't even come on. They had Miles Lieber and Carl Lieber's son starting, but he's 6'2" and he didn't get a kick. He didn't get a kick from Sweeney.
I mean, it's interesting. Do you know what else I was thinking about is, our transfer activity, because in actual fact, if you look at it, the team we've got now, the squad we have now, how many additions have we made to the squad? Can anyone answer this? How many additions have we made to the squad? Because I know the answer. How many additions?
I can, but I'll let everyone else talk quickly.
Yeah.
No, not enough, I don't think. Basically,
I think it's quite a few little bits and bobs here and there. Matt, put us out of our misery, though.
Literally, as far as I can see, Mark, correct me if I'm wrong, we've only made two additions to the squad. That's two new players.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Which is Sweeney and Sessegnon.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Not enough. We've not done new business. I don't know why that is. I guess we've got no money, but whatever.
Yeah, I suppose it feels like it's more because obviously we've added Tilly, who wasn't our player.
Yeah.
And we have re-signed Maycock. Now, we obviously he was in the squad last year, so he's not new at all in that regard.
And we re-signed Seddon.
And they feel like new transfers, new signings, because obviously we didn't believe at the end of last season when we were going through the squad depth and everything else. I don't think either of us, any of us, thought that we would keep them.
No.
But it's. I mean, but the truth is that we haven't added to the squad really at all. Only two players.
That's a nightmare. We've got a tiny squad again. We've got no depth. Pre-season probably doesn't mean anything. If we don't add some depth, we are going to struggle massively, for sure.
I'm not feeling quite as negative, largely because I suppose the addition of having Tilly and Seddon and Maycock, which I didn't expect to get, and having looked like we've got a centre-back through, and if the rumours are about Kanu coming in and signing, then that's not a bad addition, because, I mean, Kanu scored like 15, 16 goals last season for Walsall, and he's only 21. And I've actually heard relatively good things about him from before. So that's not, I don't think that's a bad addition for us, particularly considering the level we're at. So I'm a little bit more optimistic than you guys, though we did have a brilliant start last season. That's the other issue.
Well, that was the thing, because we had a rubbish pre-season, didn't we? And a good start to the season. So let's hope that it's not the reverse.
I think it's easy in pre-season to read too much into things. But what you can probably see is if there are fundamental issues in the team in terms of its organisation, in terms of its fitness, in terms of its pattern of play, then you'll see that. But if it's just a case of, you know, they want it more. I mean, there was a point with about 10 minutes left where Horwin, who, as I say, is a 17, 18-year-old kid who may be like fifth choice at best centre-back, he went up for a header against Harvey Nibbs, who was a Charlton sub, but they bought him from Reading this time last year for about £1.5 million. Got a lot of experience in Championship and League One level. And Horwin absolutely dominated him in the air. Nibs fell over and came up rubbing his head and realised he couldn't actually appeal for a foul because he just didn't look like he wanted the ball enough. And I thought, well, that's a really good sign, you know. And there's one small incident. You shouldn't make too much out of that particular thing. But that to me showed that our Charlton really weren't on it, but we were on it. And even our subs that were coming on, you know, were looking to pass forward. We're looking, both Ivanovic and Horan are quick but not particularly tall, so Chris Perry sprang to mind quite quickly. But you're right in terms of the actual overall depth. When the second string came on, it was only the midfield really that had any particular senior options. But you know, if Stevens is injured for a while, then you clearly needed another striker. I don't know who the fourth striker is supposed to be because Foyo's gone.
Yeah,
and this is the other thing since last week. Foyo, how on earth did we manage to, with the greatest respect, get rid of Foyer to an American team?
Aren't the four at the moment? The four at the moment would be Brown, Stevens, Sass, and Hackford. That's our four, and you know that's not exactly going to put the fear of God into anyone. No. And as for the guy for the rumor with Kanu, and who knows? I thought it was quite interesting in the post-match interview that JJ was talking openly about him. I thought it was quite a weird thing. I know that people got quite excited because that post-match interview was on the BBC and not put out immediately on our channels, which obviously means that everything is wrong. but still, I thought it was quite interesting that. You know, JJ openly talked about getting, and again, I couldn't work out. Do you think it would be, would it be a loan or would it be an actual purchase?
I would say 21 is going to be a loan.
You'd like it to be a permanent transfer overall, except that what finances have we got? And usually when it's a loan, not a transfer, you're obviously having part of the wages subsidised. Charlton certainly have enough strikers. You know, they just signed Colin Grant, re-signed Colin Grant at the end of last week. He's played in the Championship for West Brom last year. And they've got Lieber and they've got Matt Godden as well, who's been in the Championship. So they've definitely got a lot of resources, and they're playing one central striker and two wingers, and they also signed another winger at the weekend. So they definitely got the resources overall. So Carney, if you can't even get on when you're playing relative second string in a pre-season friendly against a League One team, that's what we are, then he's going to realise that he's out of sorts. What I found interesting about the interview with Jackson, he does seem to give more to, to the BBC and more little tidbits, actually. If you go back through last season, even in games when we'd lost, he would tell a lot to the BBC, and the stuff he'd tell and the stuff that would be reported on the OS would be pretty bland. But to the BBC, he was saying, I know Carnell, I gave him his debut at Charlton as a young player. So that indicates that there's already a level of trust and understanding between an actual player. Because, you know, I said at the end of last year, we can only judge our players when we play them in the appropriate position. Sasu as a striker on Saturday for, I'd say, at least a third of the game. And he only played the first half. But at least a chunk of that first half, Sasu looked like a striker that actually was worth persevering with. He had a lot of pace. He outgunned his marker on a couple of occasions, made a couple of saves. But again, even though he's 6'3", he wasn't any particular threat in the air. And that's the concern I have with whatever strikers we have. Without our lovely, dear, beloved, and much maligned Omar Bougal in the squad, we need a second option. You know, quick forwards are one thing and are marvellous in themselves. But someone like Hackford, if he doesn't have someone holding the ball up to feed him the ball, likewise Brown as well, the impact is going to be negated.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I just like to say, Mark, you've done an amazing job of knowing everything about the opposition. It's disturbing how much you know about Charlton, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't know who you know more about.
The only reason I know stuff about Charlton is because I've been basically keeping an eye on this Substack information from journalists to find out whether or not we're likely to sign Carney. That's the only reason I was following it.
She knows about all the team. Anyhow, no, it's going to be. So we know this is what we know. We know it's 3-5-2. We know we've got a truckload of midfielders, and whether we're going to have to get rid of one or two of them.
We've got so many midfielders. The nightmare for next season is basically we do not have strikers. They are slow midfielders who occasionally will attempt a shot at goal. So I am
to be fair, the only slow midfielder we have from the ones we saw on Saturday, the only slow midfielder and demonstrably slower than anyone else, is Jake Greaves. He unfortunately, as my daughter politely put it, looks like he needs to be put out to pasture.
Yeah, but then they need to become strikers. Do you see what I mean? Like, everyone is playing, all the guys we've got, they are not, like, they're not sprightly on the ball. That's what I'm worried about. We need someone who can grab it and bang it.
Again, we haven't seen him because he was injured and then not involved and out on loan and injured again. But McCoy Splatt could be the dark horse of the season.
No, that's true. Jennings,
But McCoy Splatt on the ball, in possession, bit of shithousery, well able to hold the ball up and actually look quite promising and penetrating with his passing, was definitely an impressive. I'd say probably the I don't know why they gave Jennings player of the match, but it's a pre-season game. Who cares? But McCoy Splatt,
Where was he on loan last season? Did he any good?
McCoy Splatt was on loan at Yeovil, and he played about three games in the Green Jet. So he was at Yeovil in the Conference South, I think now.
Yeah, he was. And I mean, I was quite surprised because we were bringing players back, weren't we? But he wasn't brought back. Yeah. I was thinking that he would have been brought back at the time, but he wasn't. We brought back Foyo. But it does sound like he's done quite well.
I think the difference is that both Foyo and Jennings at that point had played a run of games for Sutton. And we needed to parachute players in because we had so many injuries who actually had some kind of match fitness.
Whereas and to be honest with you, I guess, I know this is a weird thing, but local, I mean, they didn't have to, you know, it wouldn't have to, I guess you'd have had to get McCoy's back from wherever he was and put him up somewhere. It would have been, but I'm pleased he's doing well and he's getting into it, but it's going to be interesting whether he's one of those breakthrough players. Mark, what would be your three then at the moment in midfield? Not wing backs, our sort of like the three midfield.
To be honest, I'd start with the midfield that kind of came through second half of last year. So Alistair Smith sitting, it was apparent actually when Smith came on the last 20 minutes on Saturday, everything just got a little calmer in midfield.
Yeah, Smith is really good.
He's holding the ball up, confident in being able to dictate play, physical in his challenges. And then he had Hippolyte and Maycock running off him. Hippolyte being left-footed obviously gives you that much better balance as well. So that would be my midfield. Hippolyte, Maycock and Smith, which then means you can leave Reeves on the bench the whole time and bring him in for your worthless cup type games. But if he's in a game where midfielders are going to run off him, then he just hasn't got the pace to be able to, he hasn't got the engine to keep up with that. But then McCoy's back doesn't get into that, but McCoy's back is a very good option. And certainly from Jennings' point of view, he has the legs, the engine, as the cliche goes, to be able to keep up as well. So that would probably be my main three with McCoy Splatt and Jennings. But then Nelson also didn't let himself down either. So there you go. There's actually
Nelson. So it's really, I mean, it is fascinating. And also, you know, in a weird
element of that, we would play a five where it's more of a flat five, as in we're not really playing, we're playing not so much wing back, so we've got those five midfielders across.
Well, none of them are, apart from Nkeng, none of them are really naturally wingers, unfortunately. I think you could possibly play Hatfield as a winger, but again, if you're wingers, you've got to make sure you track back. I'll tell you one thing that impressed me about Nkeng, he only played the last 20 or so, but he looked physically stronger, physically fitter, but also physically, you can't see this to listeners, I'm trying to indicate that he's got a much better upper body strength than he had before. But people tried to shrug him off the ball a couple of times, which obviously a lot of teams were doing last year. And he basically, they bounced off him. So in that respect, I think, that's encouraging too. I'd really like to be able to get him to the team. I don't quite know how we do it overall, but I don't really want to, we said it last year, if we can get Nkeng in the team without giving him defensive responsibilities, he's going to be a massive asset.
And that is a problem. I mean, where does Nkeng play? Because he's only going to, in this squad, he only fits as a wing back, or does he play as a striker, which I just think would be, I don't know. I mean, obviously I didn't see the Norwich game, I didn't see the Charlton game, but Mark, was he playing wide in both those games, I'm assuming.
Yeah, he came on at right wing back, actually, for the last 20 or so against... and he came on at right wing back, and they brought on Ed Leach, who, again, is a 17, 18-year-old second-year pro, who is clearly a winger as well. So we finished the game with two kids in centre-back and two kids playing wing-back, and the two kids playing wing-back were most definitely wingers. The benefit we had was that Asimwe was playing fullback for Charlton, so you know he's as what's the word, space cadet as he ever was, but fortunately he doesn't play for us anymore. So crazy.
Do you think there's a space for Nkeng as a kind of roaming free person up front?
Yeah, in the Brown role, basically, yes. I think we'd all love to be in a situation where we could play Brown in midfield. But I think if you played him in midfield, you'd need him to do the kind of work and have the engine and the authority and also the box-to-box nature that both Hippolyte and Maycock have. And with all those midfield players we've talked about, I think it's, at the moment, sadly a case of Brown or Nkeng, but not both of them in the same team. Unless we're obviously 2-0 down with 20 minutes left.
So Brown and Nkeng in the midfield then a lot?
The only way that Brandon King in the midfield work is if you've got one central striker who's big enough, strong enough, ugly enough and quick enough to hold the ball up.
Yeah, which we don't have.
The options that's just outlined, we don't have that
in
the whole squad. I don't know how big or strong or physical Kano is, but I don't think he is particularly.
No, that's going to be... Well, and also we don't know what's happening with that. So, lots of rumours around that one. But I mean, that would be great. And if it's a purchase, brilliant. But the assumption would be that it would be a loan. Anyhow, so that's cool. And we've got two more pre-seasons coming up: Wealdstone away, and then QPR at home. So you know, it's been a to be honest with you, I think the Wealdstone game is going to be one of the more challenging ones, because I think that they'll come at us much like we come at the sides who are in the league above us. I think they're going to really want it. I think the sides of the Championship are sort of, it's for them, it's kind of getting minutes in, which is the excuse they'll give for losing. But I think the Wealdstone one, I think, will be a really tough challenge. That will be an interesting one.
I'm reading his obviously very truthful Wikipedia. So last year, he was Young Player of the Year, Players Player of the Year, Player of the Season, and top goal scorer for Walsall.
Yeah.
Basically their best player.
And Walsall did the same thing 2 years in a row, which is a really good first half of the season and tail off big time after Christmas.
He was lead to Young Player of the Season as well. And he is specialised in long distance running and set a handful of school records.
But he's also probably about 5'9", right?
How
tall is he? Where's his height?
Not that tall.
Don't know how tall he is. But yeah, not fairly decent looking stats there, really, to be honest. He's an international for Sierra Leone. And that's it.
You see, we're going to do all this research and everything, dear listener, and he's going to be joining someone completely different over the summer. Oh, dear me. But anyhow, listen, it's shaping up. It's not been a bad pre-season. I think the bonding thing in Spain, again, is another good thing. Yeah. That was a great experience. And I think, you know, we had a few fans who were over there for that, which would have been fun. So, you know, it's shaping up, and everything that JJ's saying seems really positive. But let's face it, we're still quite light. And I understand he's saying we're in no rush to get people, you know, that the window doesn't close for another month. However, the season starts in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And what we don't want to be doing is being in a position after four or five games where, you know, we're still scrambling around for a first win. That would not be a good position to be in. So we need to get something done soonish, in my humble opinion. But you know, I guess it comes down to the money, which brings us on, my friends, to one of the most recent videos that came out. The interview between Graham Price and James, and I'm going to get James L.
Longhurst.
Thank you. There's another James on there as well. So that, I think that was, and again, you know, it's interesting because the ask there was, you know, people who'd replied to a survey saying that they would be happy to extend their bonds. Am I right? Or sort of
no,
like,
no,
you know,
to get new bonds. It was about getting new bonds. So there was a survey asking fans who would be up for new bonds. And indicated 3+ million. And yet it seems, according to that podcast, that they haven't, the people who've replied have not reached a million yet. So it's like 600,000, I think it was. I can't remember exactly.
Not even close to that, mate.
It was
300,000 on the video.
Yeah.
And I checked the actual website itself, Plough Lane Bond, this afternoon. And it's gone up 75k since that video, which is something, obviously, but it's still like only just over a third of a million.
But basically the podcast was, we put out a survey asking people if they would invest in more bonds. Loads of people said yes, we would. It was over 3 million. And they opened the bond, obviously. And it's way under
at the moment. Now, whether that means that people won't do it at all, or they just haven't got around to it, or they said one thing and they're acting differently, which is...
Yeah, we don't know. I mean, we don't know. But it's slightly depressing, I think.
Well, yeah, but I just wonder if that, you know, because part of me was thinking it was people whose bonds were coming to fruition.
It's all about new bonds, basically.
The intention is, if I've understood it right, is that people will take out new bonds and the 1.2 million at least that they're looking for, preferably obviously much higher, would be sufficient to be able to pay off the bonds maturing at the end of this coming season.
Correct.
And obviously, if you don't, then you've got a financial black hole.
Yeah.
So it's anyhow. The I guess the point is doing that. And but do we think that was the best way to communicate to people? I mean, it's made some impact, as you were saying, Mark, because £75,000 has come in since that came through. Is there other ways that we can be communicating with people about the bonds?
Well, of course there are. I mean, the reality is we've had two pre-seasons of friendlies where more than, best part of 2,000 home fans, let alone the away fans, turned up. You know, we had 3,000 plus for Norwich and 2,600 for Charlton Saturday, and then we've got one more coming out against QPR as well. So you could do some leafleting there, some information there, potentially. I would say the video was sensible, the language used was sensible. The timing, considering we'd put nothing else really through all of pre-season until post-match or post-Charlton, the timing on a Friday night when people are waiting for team news and previews and so on was pretty crap, in my personal humble opinion.
I don't think...
People are not engaged at that point for that type of thing.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think it's a great way of communicating what is required. Clearly, people have expressed an opinion they want to put in bonds. That hasn't turned into what was expected. So the club is trying to explain to people, like, hey, you said you were going to give us all this money and now you're not, right? But I don't think the official podcast was the way to do it, because it's a random podcast anyway. So I think it should be on our site news. It should be on all the other areas. I don't think that was the best way to go about thinking, explaining, which is what I've seen, that we haven't actually got the amount of money we expected based on the survey we already did. So it's a bit weird.
How would you have done it, Adam?
No, I think writing to all the people who expressed that they're going to put in the money directly would have been one thing. Maybe the club's already done that. I don't know. But to put it on the official podcast is a bit weird, because all the other podcasts, the official ones done, have been about specific things around the club. This is just I think it's an odd way to do it. I don't know if there's a better way, but it seems
I can think of several better ways that they could have done it. Where I'm at with it, though, on a comms front, is, you know, we don't have, like, the biggest comms team. We don't have the time to do, you know, brilliant comms every single time. Our comms is better than it used to be. I don't think there's any doubt about that, in my opinion.
Yeah, 100%.
Where we've got to realise is that we have limitations about how we can do things and how we can... So picking on a small club that's trying to do small backroom stuff, that's trying to do the best it can in a ridiculously competitive market, it is harsh on those guys who do, I think, a fantastic job. Yes, I think I'm all for, as you know, the idea of having a kind of more volunteer pool that we kind of tap into and is organized, and that might be a way around it. But given where we're at, you know, yes, they didn't do it right, but they've done an awful lot of other things right. I mean, I would have been on the view of, you know, what you've got is you've got £3 million pledged. Then you go to those 3 million people, you go to the people who pledged that in various different ways to just to kind of chase them up. You know, you actually would do, I would be looking at a call centre. I'll be looking at getting some volunteers on the phone to try and take those pledges through. I'd be doing individual, you know, and having a supporter journey for each of those people. That's where I would be looking at doing that. And, you know, you might put a news story saying that we will be contacting all of the people who pledged. You know, you do a support journey for them. And if that didn't bear fruit, then you might do a bit more of a podcast, which is kind of looking at who did we miss the last time around. That's the route I would have done. But, you know, to say, and they can still do that, right? There's nothing saying they can't still do that. And they may be doing that because none of us, I'm assuming how many of us pledged to buy more bonds. So they could have been happening behind the scenes. So I kind of, you know, give them a bit more of a slack. Largely because I know that the capacity for which our club has, which is not, you know, it's not big, right? You know, if you ask all of us, who would we rather be, where would we rather be putting money on trying to get a new striker or, you know, making sure we pay an extra bit more on the comms budget, probably most of us would opt for the striker element. you know, even though I'm like a big fan of comms, right? I think, you know, ultimately we should be investing in our backroom staff. But, you know, most of our fan base are going to opt for the striker.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reason being, either our budget would decrease significantly if we're in a league below. So, you know, hopefully, if we're in this league, we might eventually be able to get to a situation with investment coming in to put into the backroom staff. I agree, though. I mean, I think that's the way to do it. I think the best way would have been direct contact with people. And like you say, though, we don't know what's going on. So maybe they've done that already. I think, you know, possibly it'd be useful for them to have said that. if they've started to do that already, that would have been a useful thing.
Well, exactly. That's the thing. It's a random, like, official podcast that came out, which clearly spells out that there is a concern that all those people who said they were going to invest X, Y, and Z haven't yet. That is a bit weird. It's a bit weird, you know, and I agree with Niall totally. Hopefully they've been reaching out to these people independently. But it's a bit of a weird one. It is a weird one, I have to say.
Yeah, not as weird as saying Z. But you know, it's quite weird. Which is really weird, to be honest with you. But
I think our alphabet ends in the Z, doesn't it, Matt? Does it end in the
Z? Yeah, it does. I mean, I can get it because I think some people grew up on Sesame Street, and I can understand where you're coming from. But really, we all know this is Z.
I read Dr. Seuss to my kids loads of times. I mean, they're like 19 and 22 now, but I remember reading it, and however tired I was when I was reading it to them, I got to the thing which rhymes in Z, and I had to change it in it. It grated. I could not read the Z out. So, non-football related segue.
Hey, you know, some say aluminium, some say aluminium. It's fine.
No one says aluminium.
No one says aluminium.
In Adam's words, to quote Pulp Fiction, Zed's dead, mate. Zed's
dead.
We're not
Pulp Fiction.
Z's dead.
Listen, I was... like singing along just before the semi-final of the World Cup came on to a random online version on YouTube of Three Lions. And I had to then basically explain to my son, because he didn't know. It's like, you know, Jules Rimet still gleaming. Oh. Who's Jules Rimet? You know. Nobby dancing, who's Nobby?
Yeah, you know? Flipping. You've taken me back now. I'm getting PTSD from that flipping semi-final.
Okay, completely. Has anyone seen the Vinnie Jones Sky documentary?
Yes, I have, yeah.
Yes.
That is lovely. I watched it the other night. My wife watched it, and she never got to go to Plough Lane. Her first season was the first season at Celeste. Second season at Celeste, after I came back from uni. And so she saw some Plough Lane, and that brought back some lovely nostalgic things there.
No, it's a good documentary.
Yeah, I thought it was really good, and I thought it was really good Wimbledon focus. I mean, I thought he was quite flippant about his second spell with us, because I'm pretty sure his second spell with us was longer than the first spell he had. But it felt like he had to go back into being this sort of like thug player for whatever reason. Whereas he didn't, I think, am I right, Niall? He didn't get sent off for, was it Leeds or Sheffield United? One day, he just never gets sent off.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, but it was interesting. I would highly recommend it. And maybe there'll be other things coming out soon. I mean, obviously, there's the film. We're not going to let it pass, people. Even though the club aren't talking about it, and you know, no one's allowed to say anything.
No.
We all keep remembering that on Sunday brunch, someone mentioned that there's going to be a film. And also, Adam is still hankering after the third instalment of our promotion season, which is getting further and further away, mate.
Miles away. Like, for goodness sake, it's ridiculous.
You are quite right, Mr. Matt Cooper. Vinnie Jones's stats: 86 to 89, 77 appearances, 9 goals. 92 to 98, 177 appearances, mostly played for any club. 12 goals.
Yeah. He was, I mean, like, to be honest with you, in both spells, he was a good player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he did his job, of which was intimidating people as well. But, you know, he could play a little bit. He could play ping a pass.
Yeah.
Anyhow, watch the Netflix thing and watch this other film when it comes out. It's the club aren't going to tell us about.
Forever. We've been waiting for years for that film.
I know.
I've got to benefit from, though, and obviously, Adam, dear listener, you can't see, but Adam is sporting the new red kit. And the one thing about going to the preseason games, as I saw from the big queues, is that there's a lot of new merchandise. And it's, again, fair play to Matt Haylock and all the guys and gals in the shop, because it's really good. It's pretty spenny, as they say. You know, some of the prices are quite expensive. The long sleeve shirts, I think, are 60 quid now. But I mean, the women's team have a new bespoke kit, which is
it's amazing,
specifically for the women's team, and it's really sharp. Actually, it's jet black with like a little blue and yellow trim, I think. But yeah, quite impressed by that.
No, the women's,
and I like the color blue half collar and yellow half collar.
Yeah, no, the women's like kit is amazing. I mean, I haven't bought that one yet, but I might do.
What's happening with the women's team? Obviously, I missed George last week, so
well. Essentially, all of the management jumped ship and went to Farnham, which is the level below we were in, so two levels below where we are now. Some of their players have gone. Ashley's gone, unfortunately.
Yeah.
One of the Buckingham sisters, who's a wide right winger, I think, who played really well in one of the games I saw towards the end of last season, she's gone to Farnham as well. But not that many have actually gone, to be honest. Ellie Dory is definitely re-signed. Rosie Russell's definitely re-signed. They've got a new female manager. They played a couple of pre-season friendlies and they've won them both.
And the new manager, whose name Mark is going to find now, has spoken incredibly well. But the one interesting thing is that the kit, the women's kit, which I probably one would say is like potentially the best kit out of the lot that have come out this season. All the funds from that go to the women's team. So if you buy that kit, all of the profits from that go to the women's team, which I think is fantastic.
And there is a, as obviously there is a women's fit cut, whatever the appropriate term is, of the standard men's kit. There is also now a men's cut, i.e., fat bastard for the likes of me, design and fit for the of the women's kit as well. Sabia Jamal is the new women's manager's name,
which we all knew. So horrendous it is, but yeah, that's and it's fantastic. And she's spoken once or twice on the official podcast and speaks really well. So it's, I mean, we have lost a lot of players on the women's team. I think we've brought some in. Some have returned. It'll be interesting to see how we get on, because it's, you know, it's, that is a very, very tough league. And again, it's about money, you know. So if you can buy the women's kit, and then that, like I say, it supports the team.
And just like in the men's game, you know, the very top level in the Premier League with Morgan Rodgers, et cetera, going for over 100 million, there's some silly money going around, relatively speaking, in the women's team as well. Three or four of the Spanish team that won the World Cup have all come across now to play in the Women's Super League.
Yep, and they're playing, is it London City, I think? Is that London City
have got a couple of the Spanish international team.
Yeah, and Mary Earps as well.
And Mary Earps, yeah. Don't think that those players will come cheap.
Exactly. But anyhow, so now we bring on to the next few games. I think it's going to be interesting to see if we get people in. Interesting to see what are you looking out for in the next couple of games?
Goals.
A new striker.
Yeah, no, we need strikers because I don't think we have any really.
I mean, the interesting thing is he's played various people a certain amount of minutes to be able to get them all roughly the same amount of squad time. Now he's got two more games, QPR and Willesden tomorrow night, to actually get an idea of what his first choice team would be. Because at the moment, obviously, McDonald has no competition in goal, but Tilly hasn't played much pre-season, neither has Sessegnon, dipped in and out. Obviously, we haven't played certain left wing back because we haven't been able to play certain left wing back. I don't think that you played Johnson and Oggs and Sweeney together. And I think those three would probably be the first choice back three. So maybe we do that against QPR and we let some of the kids have more of a run against Willesden, because at the end of the day, if they can't hack it against Willesden, then we need to get them out on loan, you know, in Conference South at worse straight away. We can't even though the squad's thin, you can't think, well, hang on, this is someone who we can put on if we get an injury after 5 minutes at Huddersfield, you know, for example.
Did we find out how tall Kearney was, Noel?
5'11".
Yeah, that's not a strike. That's not a target man, is it?
No.
That's short.
I mean, the thing about Marcus Brown on Saturday, for example, was he was just as mercurial as ever. You know, for the first 20 minutes, you didn't even know that he was on the pitch. Then as soon as he got the ball, he turned on a sixpence, put a devilish shot in, and the keeper parried it, and Jennings put the rebound in for the first goal. Whereas the rest of the game, when the ball was played and it went towards him in the air, he just didn't look like he could be bothered.
Stevens is also 5'11", by the way.
Yeah,
and there's a difference because Matt Stevens in the air, games like Reading last year, you know, really was an absolute handful.
Yeah. Anyhow, it's going to be interesting, but you know, but we're holding our own at the moment in pre-season. Obviously, you know, competitive matches are a completely different kettle of fish, but at the moment we're holding our own. So maybe we're worrying unnecessarily.
No, I don't think having tiny forwards is something we should not be worrying about. Having tiny forwards is a bad thing.
I had the four of you. I know you're all taller than me, but I am in fact 5'11". So I'm kind of taking a bit of offence at that, Adam.
You're not a footballer.
There's a reason why you're left back, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Your height suits your profession, Niall.
The curious thing for me is normally you would start the season with the strongest team and then you have the first round of the League Cup fairly quickly afterwards, and then you play a slightly weakened team, you play your cup goalkeeper in inverted commas. But obviously the way this is now panning out this season, the first game of the actual season, which is a week on Saturday, is the home game against Newport, which is the cup game. Now, that you would imagine would be a relatively more straightforward game, he caveats, than the Huddersfield away game the week after. But you still surely want to start your season strongly, confidently, and therefore play your first team, right? Play your strongest team.
Yeah, totally.
I think we probably will play a strong team against Newport, because it's also weird, isn't it, to have a League Cup on a Saturday you know, where which actually means we might get a reasonable gate, I would have thought, particularly if you're looking at the pre-seasons, have got three and 2,600. You'd probably be looking at something around that figure, maybe a bit more for Newport.
No, will you be there?
Well, this is the question. It's Niall's birthday, everyone. Dylan,
yeah. So, will you be there, Niall? Is that how you're celebrating your birthday?
Offer?
I don't know. I probably will be. Depends on the pressure I get from my family about that.
Well, it's your birthday now.
It's your birthday, yeah.
Because I've decided accordingly that I'm going to go to Huddersfield so that I can actually, because my birthday is like 10 days after that. So I'm going to go to Huddersfield and then spend a bit of time in Yorkshire and see some relatives up there and win my way back.
There you are, Niall.
Well, go to Wimbledon, see some relatives, and then wind my way back.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I am your relative.
Don't you need to go to Wimbledon to see him?
Yeah. No, you can just cross the road.
Another orange juice, you know.
Oh,
work recording this, so you know it's probably a little bit of a trek to get to him right now.
Yeah,
maybe later tonight.
Yeah. Anyhow, chaps, I think that's it. It's all fun and games. Let's see what else is going to be coming out soon from the club. I think, Adam, you were saying there's something seems to be doing the rounds at the moment, but it feels like it's a year old on the for whatever reason that's been on the socials as well.
I'm told that video you just mentioned, I've literally just got a WhatsApp about that, which says it was made in the spring before we stayed up. So it was made in the spring.
I knew it.
But for whatever reason, it's only just been released. It hasn't even been released. Someone's just discovered it. Hasn't even put on the club website.
No, it's only just been released by World Within in the last 5 days, but it was definitely a year old in terms of
The problem is they're very American, so American that they are talking about themselves as the jersey sponsor. I'm sorry, Infantino and Trump and everybody else can go themselves. If you're going to use language and talk about football because it's football, association football, Nanny a gridiron and stuff, use the right terminology.
And don't say Z.
Fleming, why am I even here?
We love you, Adam.
Thank you.
Yeah, because you know what buttons to press. I clearly don't. Anyhow, chaps, that's it for this week. Thank you very much for listening. We shall be in touch. I think that's it now. We're running all the way through now, Adam.
Yeah,
from this point on, right the way through to the end of the season. We need your support, people, in all sorts of different ways. We're the same old Wobbles. We're back.
I've been standing here since many years ago. You've been under my skin for as long as I have known. Stand in the rain and the cold. Take the rough with the smooth.